there were enormous anti-Vietnam War demonstrations here. More than 10,000 people were arrested. It's the largest mass arrest in U.S. history. We filed a series of class actions. Everyone's arrest was declared unconstitutional.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to A More Perfect District, a podcast from the ACLU of D.C. We work to protect and advance civil liberties and civil rights for people who live in, work in, and visit D.C., in court, in the legislature, and in the street. I'm your host for this episode, Monica Hopkins, Executive Director of the ACLU DC. Each episode, we take a deep dive into the civil rights and civil liberties issues shaping Washington, D.C. today and explore how we can protect our rights and move closer to a more just and free D.C. Washington, D.C. is known for being the place to protest where millions of people from across the country come to make their voices heard. But what makes protest here so powerful, and what rights do you actually have when you take to the streets? Today, I'm joined by Art Spitzer, senior counsel who has spent more than 40 years defending First Amendment rights. We'll talk about why protest is essential to a healthy democracy, what you need to know to exercise your rights in D.C., and how collective action can help build a more just and free district. Hi, Art. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Monica. Happy to be here.
Yeah, so we're going to jump in to First Amendment stuff today, but before we get started, what drew you to this work and being with the ACLU?
Well, I think what really drew me to this work is the golden rule, do unto others as they do to you. And I think basically that's what the ACLU is all about. You don't want people to tell you what you can say, what you can read, where you can go. Well, and you shouldn't impose that on others. And so we protect civil rights and civil liberties. The government should treat us the way we would treat other people.
Nice. And you've been here quite a while.
I've been here 45 years. Yeah. Quite a while. My hair was black when I got here.
Right. I've seen pictures. So, so Art, can you tell us a little bit about how the ACLU has defended protesters' rights in D.C.?
That's been a main focus of our attention since we started, really, 65 years ago. One of our early cases involved the United States Capitol grounds, which by law were closed to any kind of demonstration. We thought that was wrong. We sued. A three-judge court agreed with us. The government tried to go to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court wouldn't hear it. So the Capitol grounds are open for demonstration activity. We've done a lot of work involving the White House and the area around it, Lafayette Park, the White House sidewalk, the Ellipse. On several occasions, presidents, President Nixon, President Reagan, tried to limit demonstrations there, how many people, what kind of signs you could hold, what hours you could be there. And we fought each of those kinds of restrictions. And we didn't win everything, but we won a fair amount. But there are some very technical rules about demonstrating in those areas that people have to be aware of. We did the May Day cases in 1971. There were enormous anti-Vietnam War demonstrations here. More than 10,000 people were arrested. It's the largest mass arrest in U.S. history. We filed a series of class actions. Everyone's arrest was declared unconstitutional, and the records were expunged, and some people were able to get money damages. Currently, we're still doing a case involving Lafayette Park, the demonstrations that occurred there after George Floyd's killing, when the federal police attacked the peaceful demonstrators, and we filed a lawsuit right away, and some of that has been resolved, but some of it is still going on. And for the rest of D.C., not the downtown federal areas, our main accomplishment has been legislative. We went to the D.C. Council about 15 years ago or so, and helped to persuade them to pass the First Amendment Assemblies Act, which goes beyond the First Amendment in protecting the rights of people to demonstrate on D.C. property, streets and sidewalks. You don't have to get a permit. If you're demonstrating, the police's job, this law makes clear, is to accommodate you and not to shut you down.
Yeah, and that sort of also came out of a case we had as well.
It came out of what we call the Pershing Park case, where D.C. police surrounded a bunch of peaceful demonstrators in Pershing Park and Freedom Plaza, And just arrested everybody who was there, which included a lot of onlookers, which included people who were just walking to work in the morning. The D.C. Council got very upset at the D.C. police about what they did, and that's what really gave us the leverage to push them for a very broad First Amendment law.
What I love about that is sort of this idea that about protesting and, oh, protecting protesters' rights, but actually it sweeps up everybody. We're protecting everybody's rights.
That's absolutely right.
And we're doing it through litigation. And we're like, how do we protect in the future also by changing the system and
changing the law? And the good news is the DC police has really been pretty good at following that law. You often will see, if you're driving around town or walking around town, you'll see a bunch of demonstrators walking down the street and DC police cars in front and behind, sort of clearing the way, closing off the cross streets while they go by. And often those groups have permits, but sometimes they don't. And the police really treat them pretty much the same.
And we'll be there if they don't.
And we will.
So how have you seen protesting in DC change over time?
Well, it goes up and down, I think, and it depends, of course, what's going on in the world that people want to protest. You know, there have been massive demonstrations on the Mall from time to time. There was the Million Man March. There was the, I think it was called the March to Protect Our Lives, a reproductive freedom choice march that we were involved in. Enormous anti-war mobilizations back at the time of Vietnam, and of course the enormous women's march right after Trump's first inauguration. So depends what's going on is what happens with demonstrating in D.C. And there are demonstrations in D.C. pretty much every day of the year, ranging from, you know, little groups of 15 or 20 outside some embassy to these marches or rallies of, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. There have been civil disobedience at various rallies along the way. Some have them, some don't have them. There have been some cases where there's a sort of large-scale choreographed arrests, like during apartheid, there were arrests at the South African embassy day after day after day. Oh, wow. A certain number of people would just show up and chain themselves to the door and get arrested. And that's something that was very effective, I think, in that particular situation, but it hasn't happened again because there hasn't been exactly the same kind of a situation. So I wouldn't say I see a sort of a straight trend line in one direction or another. It's much more of a wave.
Yeah, I think that kind of the cool thing about protesting is not just sort of the why, but also the how. You know, people find these creative ways to get their message out. And I was just thinking of some of the Black Lives Matter protests and protests that followed with, you know, particularly in DC with people on flatbed trucks playing go-go music and exercising their right. First Amendment rights that way to draw attention to what was actually going on here in DC.
I mean, talk about creative. In the last few months, we've seen these wonderful golden statues down on the Mall of Trump dancing with Epstein and a pile of poop on a desk. And there's several of those. It's a group of anonymous artists. Almost no one knows who they are. But they've taken advantage, really, of the rights that we've helped to protect over the years. You know, Trump doesn't want those statues to be there. And the first one was taken down, you know, knocked down by the park police very quickly. But then the government realized it couldn't do that legally, and it went back up. Because there are cases and rules in effect that say, you know, here's where you can put a statue, here's where you can get a permit. The government can't just say no because they don't like it.
It's so interesting because when we think about protests, we think about the marchers, right? And it's, you know, the statues that are just somewhere in protest of the government, but also the, as you were talking, I was thinking about the projections too, that we're seeing in a lot of places right now across the country to protest the government.
Right. And, you know, who knows what new things artificial intelligence is going to bring us.
And we'll sort of adapt our First Amendment law
I suppose.
Kind of protect those rights as well.
Yeah.
Well, why do you think it's particularly important to protest in the nation's capital?
Well, I think it's particularly important to protest everywhere, frankly. You know, protesting in a state capital or at a city hall can be just as important. And sometimes, you know, a protest at a city hall can be more effective because could be a significant amount of the town that's turning out to protest. But protest here, of course, it's a national stage. Congress is here. The president is here. And there's lots of media here. And so protests here can bring issues directly to the attention of lawmakers and executives who have the power to change things nationwide and not just in a given town or state. And that's why some of these big protests come here, because they're trying to affect the national landscape.
Yeah, we've seen sort of this interesting thing happen too, where because we're in such a time that there is a huge protest in DC, but then there are similar at the same time sort of protests, like you said, at city halls and other state capitals. And
right. I mean, No King's Day is a perfect example. Yeah. They're all over the country.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about protesters' rights here in DC?
Well, so there's some funny stuff here in DC, because it's not one government. There's the federal government, there's the DC government, and within the federal government, there's Capitol, the Congress, Capitol grounds. There's the White House, which the Secret Service has a lot of attention to. And so people demonstrating here probably have to pay a little more attention to the rules than people in some other places. If you want to demonstrate on DC streets and sidewalks, you talk to the MPD. If you want to demonstrate on the White House sidewalk, you're talking to the Secret Service and the Park Police. If you want to demonstrate on the Capitol grounds, you're talking to the Capitol Police. And each one has a different set of rules. And there are limits on how many people can be in certain places, like on the White House sidewalk or in Lafayette Park. We've put out a Know Your Rights pamphlet, which is available on our website and in paper form, that gives you a roadmap to some of that. And there are some restrictions too on, for example, the kinds of poles you can use to support a sign. You know, it can't be like a sharpened stick that could turn into a bayonet. So you have a right to go demonstrate. And most of the time, if you just went out and demonstrated, you'd be fine. But especially if you're thinking about anything unusual, whether it's civil disobedience, whether it's big signs, whether it's a speaker's platform or a stage with sound equipment, then you really need to check the rules so you won't find yourself in a problem.
Right. It's sort of like you need to know the bounds of the rules and sort of know what's within them, but also make informed choices for yourself about how far you want.
Well, that's right. Bounds. I mean, some people want to, as they say, risk arrest.
Right.
And you don't have a legal right to commit civil disobedience, but some people want to as a way to make their point. And local law enforcement pretty well knows how to deal with that too, just like those arrests at the South African embassy that I mentioned. If you want to chain yourself to the White House fence or sit down and block a doorway somewhere, you're probably going to get arrested. You'll probably be given an opportunity to get up and move away first, but you're likely to be arrested if you don't. And it's my own view is it's generally useful to give law enforcement a heads up if that's what's going to happen, so that they're not taken by surprise, because when people are surprised is when things often don't go so smoothly. If the police know that you're going to be, you know, sitting down and blocking a doorway, they'll have adequate people there, adequate vehicles there, that they can smoothly do what you want and what they need to do. And you can time it so that you'll be in court and out again the same day instead of having to be held overnight.
But the beauty is you don't have to tell the government.
You don't have to. No, you want to surprise them, you can surprise them. That's right.
So if people want to get involved in protecting and expanding protest rights in DC, what can they do?
Well, they can, of course, exercise their rights. They can support the ACLU, which is here to help you protect and defend your rights in DC. And when it comes to demonstrations that don't involve the federal government, the DC Council can be quite responsive. If people think there's something that needs to be changed and improved, we hope you'll contact us and talk to us about that. But the DC Council is open, I think, to those kinds of discussions.
Yeah. So this question is for you as a person living in the DMV. So feel free to take your ACLU DC hat off and tell us a little bit about how long you've lived in the area and what's your favorite thing about
DC. I moved here in the fall of 1976, so it's going to be 50 years later this year. I thought then, and I still think it's a beautiful place. One thing I really like about it is the easy access to outdoors. I'm in Rock Creek Park with the dog almost every morning. But it's also a real city. There's really terrific music and theater and good restaurants and stuff like that. It's not New York, but there's pretty good culture. And I think it's an exciting place to live because it's sort of the center of the universe in many ways. I mean, I'm sure New Yorkers think New York is the center of the universe and Parisians think it's Paris. But there's a lot going on here at every level. And an ordinary person can take advantage of it. You can go down and go to the visitors gallery and watch Congress in session. You can go to the Supreme Court and watch an argument. You might have to get there early. But you can do it. And so I certainly think I made a really good choice when I moved here.
Yeah, I think people would be super surprised about a city both the size of D.C. That you think of sort of, a city like New York, but massive amounts of open space in a city. You kind of get the best of both worlds.
You do. I mean, Rock Creek Park, for those who don't live here, runs right down the middle of D.C., and there's you know, from almost anywhere in DC you can get there pretty easily. And it, you know, if I'm hiking in Rock Creek Park in the summer, I can't see civilization. All I can see is trees.
It's pretty stupendous.
Well,
thank you, Art, so much for telling us a little bit about the ACLU and protest rights, and thanks for joining us. It's always lovely to talk to you.
My pleasure. You too, Monica.
That's it for this episode of A More Perfect District, a podcast from the ACLU of DC. I'm Amber Taylor, Strategic Communications Director. Thanks for spending time with us. Join us next time as we break down the civil rights and civil liberties issues impacting Washington, DC. For show notes and ways to take action right now, visit acludc.org/podcast. And don't forget to follow, rate, and share this podcast to help more people stay informed. Till next time.